Okay, so at the bottom of Tes Vav Amud Aleph in Ksuvos, actually, it's not the bottom. It's in the middle of the page. If you look opposite Tosas Dibur Maskil Gufa, I'm sorry, Tosas Dibur Maskil Prat Lazorik Evan, that is the third Tosas from the bottom. If you look opposite that in the Gemara, so there's the word Gufa, which is the second word in the line. Let me know, Ron, if you have that. Jack, I assume you're just listening. Okay. So, the Gemara says, Gufa, let's analyze this further. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira said, Kol kavua kemechtza mechtza dami. Anything which is static, which is stationary, is as if it's 50-50. This is one of the most cryptic, difficult to understand principles in all of Shas. Now, that means that there is no concept of a rove, of a majority, when things are stationary. We just had in Daf Yomi in Chulin a few days ago, I'm not sure if it came up yet, because I'm a bit ahead, but we will have, Gemara talks about where we know the principle of rove. And the Gemara says that there are several types of rove. Sometimes the rove are obvious, certain types of rove are less obvious, but the concept of rove, of going after majority, only exists if things are not stationary. Now, that seems very strange, because we know that there is a concept of bitul barov, things getting nullified in a majority. That's true. There's such a concept of something being nullified in a majority. But you can't say bitul. For example, you have stationary objects which are separate from each other, and you don't constitute a mixture. So that you can't have the majority nullify the minority. Then I'll go after the majority. And the classic case we're going to see in a few moments is the case of butcher stores, and that is the context of the statement. Let's see that. Kokovo kemetza, metzadami, bein l'kula, bein l'chuma. And that time sometimes leads us to a leniency, sometimes to a stringency. Minale, Rabbi Zeira ha. How does Rabbi Zeira know this principle? Elema, maybe we're going to say, Mitesha Chanurias, in the case of 9 stores. Kula Mochros Basar Shchuta, all those 9 stores sell slaughtered meat which is kosher meat. The Achas, and there's one store, Basar Nevela, which sells treif meat. The Lakach Me'achas Mehem, and you took from one of them, you went into one of them, bought a piece of meat, left the store, forgot which store you're in. Have no clue which store you're in. Sveiko Osler. The suffix is Osler. In other words, you have to assume the meat is Osler. Well, the Nimtza, only if you find a piece of meat in the street, Helech Acharov, then you can follow the majority. Now, what does this mean? It means that if you have a butcher store, you have 10 butcher stores, there's a 90%, and it's all assuming, of course it's weird, otherwise why were we talking about it? So we're assuming that they're all the same for our purposes. So for a simple case, it gets complicated when you take into account volume and hours and all those things, but for our purposes, they all sell the same volume of meat, they all sell open the same hours, and you go into one of the stores, and you buy a cut of meat, which could come from any of the stores, it's not recognizable by itself. So now, even though it's a 90% chance that you went into a kosher store, now, you would say it's always 50-50. You can't follow the majority. And however, if you find a piece of stewed meat in the street, in other words, you didn't go to a store, you found a piece of meat in the street in this city, since 90% of the meat in the city is kosher, you go after the majority, and you can eat the meat. Now, in our day and age, you can no longer do that, because in our day and age, we hold that basar shenisal minayin, meat which is no longer, which had a period of time which nobody was paying attention to it, or was not properly marked during that, was not properly marked or placed in that time. So then that is, that piece of meat cannot be eaten. But that's a specific rabbinic prohibition. The Torah law is what the Gemara says here. And Ron is asking what the difference is, and that is the great issue. What is the difference between going into the stores and going to the meat or having the meat come to you? This is one of the great questions in Judaism. Now, the Gemara says that's not proof that we go lekula, because it says there we have to be machmir, assume it's forbidden. I want a case in which we can be lenient based on kol kavua kemetza metzadami, anything which is stationary is like 50-50. Okay, so let's see Rashi on this. Rashi is where it says v'lokach boser me'achas mehem. If you look opposite that Tosfos, not opposite the top line, but like three lines down in the Tosfos, opposite that in Rashi, four lines down in the Tosfos. Ron, do you have it? Jack, you here? Okay. And Ron, do you have it? Okay. So it says, v'lokach boser me'achas mehem. You took meat from one of the stores, the Makom HaKvius, in their stationary place. Steak also, the sotek is forbidden. The kokavu kemechza mechzadami, because anything which is stationary is like 50-50. Or the nimtza, and if you found, however you found, basa nimtza b'shuk, the meat in the marketplace. The loya dina may is a part of it, pirish, you don't know from which store it literally separated, in other words, from whence it came. Helach acharov, follow the majority. Horov ha'bala fanenu, since that which came before us, lo b'mokom kviyus l'kocha. We didn't take it. This guy who came in front of us did not go to the place, the static place, the place where all the stores were, and take it. It was ready removed by somebody else. Called the parish mirubavka parish. Anything which comes out from. Yes, this is unstamped meat, unmarked meat. No OU, no stamp, no nothing. So according to the strict letter of the law, if we follow the majority, which this Gemara says, then go punish, we will punish. Now, even if we say nowadays that we don't, that Basar Shnei Samin is also, the meat which has not been kept is forbidden, the halacha can still apply to other substances which are not meat, because the halacha is strictly concerning meat. So let's say you had a case of, hypothetically, I'm just giving you a wild case, an unmarked, sealed, chicken is also included in this, you want to ask? Chicken is also included. An unmarked, sealed bottle of wine. So nobody touched it. The question is whether it was kosher before it was beforehand or not, before the bottle was sealed. So again, if the label came off, so then, and if you're in a city where the majority of the wine sold is kosher, you could drink the wine. Okay? So this is halacha is still relevant, just not specifically in the case of meat, but in many other areas it would still be relevant. So, we see here, again, in the middle of the sugya, that rov only applies once it's parish, to something which came out from the majority. Not to inside the majority. Ron has the same as skinned fish. Yes, the skinned fish also, you would follow the majority. It's only basar shnei saminai. Right. So if the majority of the stores were selling kosher fish, same halacha would apply, even in our day and age. Okay? So the Gemara says, that case is no good for us. So let's try another case. Ela mitisha tzvardin. Excuse me. From nine frogs, and among those nine frogs is one rodent. Now, it could be, I forget which rodents are similar to frogs, but one of them is, Rashi says it's a turtle. So I don't know, it's a turtle, I'm similar to a frog, it actually is. But you have nine frogs and one turtle, okay? Let me get this, what it means, static in a moment, Ron. But you have nine frogs and one turtle, and they're all dead. And you touch noga back from him, you touch one of them, any of them aids a man noga. You don't know which one you touched. Now, You don't say bit the barov here. Toad versus frog. Okay, 9 toads and 1 turtle. So, excuse me. So, yeah. Wait a minute. That's Svardaya here. The article says toad. But what about Makas Svardaya and Chumash? Dam Svardaya Kinim Orov Devel Shchin. They call those the toad plague? I don't know. Okay. So, in any event, when you have, thank you. Jack says that's funny. I try. You don't usually succeed, but when you have a whole creature, it's not bota barov. We have this principle: birya is not bota, something which is a complete, even ant is not bota barov. It's only can be bota barov if it's mashed up. If it's whole, it's not bota. Whether that's the rice or the rabbanon is not really relevant to us right now. That's cool. So therefore, even if you have them close together, close proximity, you have the 10 creepy crows, the 10 frogs and the 9 frogs and the 1, or toads, and the 1 turtle, it doesn't matter. They're not bota, even though they're heaped in a pile. So you went and you touch one of them. Now, dead frogs are not matamayu. A dead sheretz, a dead turtle, is matamayu. So you went to touch one of those dead creatures, and you don't know which one you touched. So, Sveiko Tome, there's the suffix after Sumir Tome. Even though 90% chances are that you touched, oh, 9 frogs, 1 toe, Ron says, Artsbo says. The Rashi says, Tav. A Tav is, I always thought, Tav in modern Hebrew was a turtle. So, I think classic Hebrew also is a turtle. Anyway, let's not get hung up on the case. The bottom line is that I apologize to Art School if I was insulting Art School. My point is that the case is 9 and 1. And even though there's 90% chance that you are Tahar, you have to assume you're Tahar. Why? Because Kokabu Kamechza Mechzadani. So it's like 50-50. So it says the Gemara, that's no evidence either. Hasam Nami L'chumra. But there too, you're being machmir on the basis of kavua. Okay, so Ella, yeah, let's say for the other case, the exact opposite. Tisha Shuratim, 9 toads, Utsvadea Aechad Menem, and there's 1 frog among them. The Naga Baechad Menem, they touch one of them, the Enyo Debeze Naga, you don't know which one he touched. So here are the 90% chances that you are Tame, 10% chance you're Tame. So nevertheless, we regard as 50-50. And therefore, the principle kicks in. We have principle that says a suffix in matters of tumah, when you have matter of doubt in matters of tumah, in Meshusa Rabim, in a public domain, and public domain is not only public domain by Shabbos. It means where there are 3 people, not 600,000. And if there are 3 people present, or it's an area which, you know, is frequented by 3 or more people, suffix tar. The question of doubt, says tar. In area, if it's and Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and Eretz Yisrael figured by 2 or less people, Sofek Tame, we have Machmir in a Sofek. This is derived from the Halacha by Sota, by so a woman who becomes forbidden to her husband, so it only becomes forbidden to her husband if there are 2 people, the man and the woman. And therefore, in that case, the Torah says Tame. But if there are 3 people, 2 men and 1 woman, or even 1 man and 2 women, that's perhaps there is no not called Tomei. So therefore, we derive that when there are more people there, in a case where you're not sure if something became Tomei or not, you can be lenient. So now, in this case, in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbi, even though there's a 90% chance that you're a Tomei, since it's Kavua, you say, no, it's 50-50. And since it's 50-50, Kokavua Kamechza Mechzadami, it's a balanced Sofek. You know, it looks to us like 90-10, it's really 50-50, and therefore it can be lenient. So here we see a case which Kokovo Kamechza Mechzadami leads to leniency. As Gemara says now, Rishus HaYachid Sveiko Tomei, if it's Rishus HaYachid, the Sveiko is Tomei. Rishus HaRabim, if it's Rishus HaRabim, Sveiko Tor, the Sveiko is Tor. Okay, that's the case, those cases are Kavua in Chazal. Now everyone wants to know, Midoraisa Minola. Where do we see this in the Torah itself? Where do we find such a passage in the Torah itself? We could have said Lachol Moshe Mitzrayim, but Mara wants to see this concept in the Torah. And Mara has it. Amar Kra, the pasuk says, V'olav lo the kamalov. In order to be liable for murder, you have to lay ambush for a person and rise up against him. So what does it mean there? You're only liable for murder, for capital murder, if you laid an ambush, if you hid in the bushes? No. Achi stabbing lo. Until you intend to kill that person. If you don't intend to kill that person, even if you intend to kill somebody else, you're exempt. Now, Rabbanan Amre, the Bei Rabbi Yonai, the rabbis in Az Rabbi Yonai said that this Achi Skadin Lo, until you intend for that specific person, excludes the following case. It includes the common case of Prat Lazorik Evan Lego, a person who throws a stone into a bunch of people. What's the question, Jackass? What about self-defense murder? We're not talking about that. I'm talking here about a deliberate crime. Not about that self-defense is not considered to be murder in Halacha. So this is talking about where we know it's capital murder. So the part says, "Hechi dami." So he threw a stone. He threw a stone to a bunch of people. A stone which could kill. It was you know that size. You try to pull it. So Mara says, "Hechi dami." What are we talking about? In lemadika tisha knani bechad yisro b'neim. Like if there are 9 Canaanites and 1 Jew. Now, even though it's forbidden to kill a non-Jew, it's not a capital crime. So since it's to the question, so if you intended to kill a non-Jew, so therefore we don't put you to death. So the Ikatish Canaanite, the Akadish Rabbeinim, so we're going to put out a case where there are 9 non-Jews, Canaanim I think is censorship, means non-Jews in general, and 1 Jew among them. So then, obviously, we have to look. Take away the Ruba Kananim people. Since most of the people in the group were non-Jews, so we can't say you intended to kill a Jew. 90% chance we're going to hit a Jew. So Inami Palgo Palgo, and even if you say it's 5 and 5, you try to get Jews to throw off death row if they killed a non-Jew. Dina de Machusa Dina. The law of the land is law. So therefore, if in America a Jew killed a non-Jew, tough on the Jew. So that's the way it works. Besides the religious law, there's also civil law. That's true even in Judaism. We could legislate that if a Jew kills a non-Jew, it's put to death. But that's civil law as opposed to religious law. And that's called Din HaMelech when it comes to Halacha. So in any event, says the Gemara. So, inami palgo palgo. What's that? Jackass. Oh yeah, the Florida guy last year. Oh, I see we're off topic. So now Jack says that was the issue with the Florida guy last year, or 2 years ago. That's correct. And even they had no, there's no moral obligation to get him off death row. It was a judgment call, I guess, whether to try and save his life or not. And I was not sure that was the right thing to do at the time. Still not sure it's the right thing to have done. Could have created a great chil Hashem. Now, Ron asked, why have religious law if there's law of the king? That's a good question. Religious law is a minimum. It's not meant to be adequate to run a society, but it's meant to give you guidelines of what you should strive for in order for society to be good. So best I can do, I'm not sure if that's clear, but as Jack says, I don't want to veer off the subject too much, so therefore let's suffice with that for now. Now, says Gemara, again, inami palgo palgo, even if it's 50-50, you still say 5 on 5, 5 to 5. We have to assume totally he didn't mean to kill a Jew. Lel Tzricha, says Manama, we need it for the following case, the Kavua. The Ika Tisha Yisrael, when there are 9 Jews, Uknani Echad Benem, and 1 Goy. The Havre Knani Kavua. So the Goy is Kavua, he's static. The Kol Kavua Kemechza Al Mechza Dami. And every Kavua is like 50-50. So even though he shot his arrow or threw a stone or shot his bullet at a target where there was a 90% chance of killing a Jew, he's exempt. Because Kol Kavua Kemechza Al Mechza Dami. And therefore, we can't put him to death. Okay? So, this is one of the sugyas of Kavua in Shas. There's several other sugyas. Now, this is a stunning halacha. Let's get it clear. To begin with, reiterate what we're talking about. And I think next week probably we'll get more into the details of what it's about. But, I mean, why it is the way it is. But what the halacha is telling us here is that whenever you have a situation in which there's no bitul berov, something is not nullified in your halacha, but you have a group of entities, so then rov only applies when something exited that group and now it's in front of us, then I can say a rov came from the majority. But when I go to the group, so then, I can't say it goes to like the majority. And that's Gemara in Ketubos. There's a story about a girl who was, raped. And we want to know if she can still marry a Kohen or not. And it depends if she was raped by a Jew or by a Goy. She was raped by a Jew, so she can still marry But I don't want to go off topic yet anyway. Just a minute. It's one of the conditions thought. So we can still marry a Kohen or not, and that depends on whether the rapist was a Jew or not a Jew. So now the question is like this. She's in a city. The majority of the people in the city she's outside the city. The majority of the people in the city are, well, actually, she's either inside or outside, depending on the case. But we have a city. The same majority of the people in the city are Jewish. A minority of the people are not Jewish. The minority of the people in the city are not Jewish. So, if rape came out of the city and raped her outside, so then we might be able to follow the majority and say she was raped by a person from the majority of the city, which means we assume it was Jewish and she can marry a Kohen. If, however, she went into the city and found a person, and she decided to go to him, it was consensual, it doesn't really matter if it's rape or not rape, it was going to be consensual as well, or somehow when she came to him, he had relations with her in whatever shape or form, so then she's forbidden. Suffolk, because called Kavua Kemechza Mechza Dami. Do we get that point? Forget about the children, which Ron is bringing up here on this chat. Get the points of the girl in the city. If she goes into, if there's somebody that comes to her and has relations with her, we assume it's in the majority. If she goes into the city, it's 50-50. Okay? So that is where the Gemara brings Ksuvas here, brings down the case, brings down the principle of Kavua. Now, no, that's not Ron asked, we would know because non-Jews were not circumcised back then. That's not true. The Arabs were always circumcised. Even before Muhammad, I think they were circumcised. Okay, so she didn't know the difference between circumcised and not circumcised. Yeah, Ron, that's we can't ask a question like that. But your source is Evan said, there's a concept of Yesh li yashay b'dolchak. You can, a solution which is a difficult solution. But it's pushing it. But you can't say, Yesh lahak shos midolchak. You can't say, I'm asking a question which is not really a question, but I'm pushing the question. So You can't say that. That question is about the circumcised or not circumcised, is pushing the point. Sorry. But getting back to your other point, let me go back there a second, if I can go back in the chat screen. Not so simple. I went back and forth. No, way back. Okay. Okay, there. All right. Oh, hi, Jamie. I can't get back there. Here it is. Okay, so it's important to show I can't eat from the crock pot, but only after it's exited the group and it's on a plate. You know, it's interesting. The short answer is yes, that's correct. In other words, if you were, this is a principle in halacha of chatichori liskabeg, a piece of meat which is significant. And that piece of meat, at least in Rabban, is not batel berov, it can't be nullified. So if you have large chunks of meat, you know, which fell into your, in your chulent, and you have 9 chunks of meat which are kosher, and 1 chunk of meat which is pork, and you're not allowed to go eat the chulent, because if that chulent has one of those pieces of pork, and even though it's 90% chance that any piece I get is kosher, I don't say rov in that circumstance, because it's not batel berov, it's kavua. Now, if one piece happens to leave the chulent pot, excuse me, and falls onto my plate, I can eat it. That's right, unless one piece is served to me on a plate. But the great served to me on a plate is not so simple if I know. I know it was served. I know it was intended to be served. If any person who knew of the mixture served it, it'll be forbidden. It has to be somebody completely innocent of the situation came and took the meat and put it on my plate or fell on my plate. Again, nobody with knowledge of the situation would be allowed to take anything from that mixture. Okay? That'd be something that had done innocently and ignorantly. This not apply a bit to the shishim. Chulent issues, though, correct? Yes, but where something is about to the shishim. If you have a drop of milk which falls into the chulent, or even several drops, as long as they're batel b'shishim, there's no concept of kavua. There, it's bittul. There's no separate static pieces. In order to have this halacha of kavua, of static, static state. In order to have the static state, you have to have distinct pieces, which create that static state. But if you don't have distinct pieces, because either they're too small or they got blended in some way, so then kavua doesn't apply. That's clear. So far, so good. This is true regardless if the food is regarded forbidden by the Torah Baik law. Well, not quite, because Safik Rabbanu Lakula. Okay, Jack. Safik Rabbanu Lakula, in other words, if you add a Safik, so if it was a suffix in the Rabbanon, so then I would say that, in other words, how do you say the Rabbanon? Pork is an Issa D'oraisa, but let's say it was an Issa D'Rabbanon which fell into your chulent, and then it was a suffix, whether it got mixed in or didn't get mixed in. I mean, a suffix, it's kavua, whatever. Yeah, something which fell to your soul was not batel, which is kavua, which is only the rabbanon. So then you'll be able to say, "Speak the rabbanon kula," and eat the pieces. But at least the first few pieces. But in a case of is it the rice like pork, it wouldn't help you. Like a chicken chill with large pieces of cheese mixed in. That sounds good to me. Well, actually, the cheese would melt. Anyway, you would see the cheese, right? That's not practical. Gonna work. Anyway, but the short answer is that the principles of Safek D'oraisa, Safek Rabbanan, the Kula, the Chumah still apply, no matter what. Okay, so again, the idea which we have to try and figure out is the why it should be like this. Why does it make a difference? Why is the halacha of rov applicable either to bittul rov, to nullification, or called a parish, something which comes from the rov? Now I want to throw a third case out. I want to stop, give you a third case, and we'll stop with this for tonight. It's an interesting question. Every city today, outside a few cities in Eretz Yisrael, reads the Megillah on the 14th day of Adar. The question is, why shouldn't we all have to read on the 15th day of Adar? Because of a suffix. What's a suffix? The cities of the world are kavua, they're static. They're not mixed together. Some of the cities in the world, Shushan and Yerushalayim at least, were surrounded by walls in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. So therefore, in every since kokavu kemechta mechtadami, we should say in every city in the world, it's a suffix, valid suffix. Is it to be read on the 14th, like a non-walled city? But around 15, like a walled city. So that's the question. It's not my question. The Achronim asked the question. So the question is, again, why don't we buy Kavua in the cities of the world? Yeah, you know, that's a good point which Juan is making. Let's know where the city was right. In the United States, although I don't know, maybe there's some Indian cities. Well, I know how long the Indians have been here, but maybe there's some Indian towns which had walls at times of Yehoshua. The Indians didn't put walls around their camps? No. Anyway, but England would be a problem, Europe would be a problem, Asia would be a problem, Africa would be a problem. So all those old world continents and cities would be a problem. So, like the Mayans and the Incans, they probably had walls at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. If they went there, they had calendars, why shouldn't they have walls? Anyway, so this is a question which obviously there must be an answer to. It's annoying question, but it's a good question for which to bounce off the issues of Kavua. That's why I wanted it up. Okay, so I want to stop here for tonight. We've got through the cases and the groundwork, and we can go through the whys and wherefores next week. There's different theories. Now, can we rely on archaeology to know if given cities are old enough, or worlds are old enough? Not necessarily. And that'd be more of a reason to be machmir, right? Because even the modern archaeology, you know, it might not be able to be trusted. What's the walls? Could be that walls are ancient. Excuse me. It's a good point. We couldn't necessarily trust archaeology. We might have to go by actually Luchumra. What was the point I wanted to make about that? Enough. Don't come with me, we do think it's old. That means we have to make. Excuse me, I have that cold. Excuse me. Sorry. Luchum and me, we have to meet on both days. Or without a. Thank you. without a bracha on the 15th day. Which is what is done nowadays in the years of the city of Suffolk, with the bracha on the 14th, without a bracha on the 15th. So archaeology could create a Suffolk to be machmir on. That's all. That's getting into the whole issue of tchelas, which is whether you have to be machmir in the mitzvah saseh, and you know, based on archaeology. But it would have to be that their tchelas in and of itself is not. I don't know if I get tchelas now. Even though tchelas is archaeological evidence, it's not sufficient evidence in the absence of a definitive springboard. Meaning that we don't know that what they were using is really tchelas. We don't know what they call tchelas. It stands to reason that it's tchelas, but it's not definitive because of the absence of a mesorah as to what tchelas is. What a city is in order to be chayv to read Megillah on the 15th is quite clear. It's, it has to have a wall from the time of Yeshua. The question is whether this is the wall or not the wall. That archaeology coming up is suffix. Tcheles, we don't know what the parameters of Tcheles are. So therefore, we can't say this archaeology proves that this is Tcheles. So although it remains in the case of Tcheles circumstantial evidence, which is different than this case over here, which is a case of not of circumstantial evidence, but of suffix in a known halacha. Let me try to clarify that again. In the case of Megillah, the walls generate the if you have walls, that is what generates the obligation. Now you see walls. The question is just how old the walls are. That's a suffix vis-a-vis an issue on which you have precise parameters. Cheles, we have no precise parameters to know what Cheles is. And then we can say, well, we're not sure if it's this or that. Let's see if we can bring evidence. We have to first figure out what the parameters of Cheles are. Even they found symptoms of the Muir Cheles and Masada last April, as Ron says, it could be, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, okay? It could be that maybe they're like the Red Zeners. They're using the wrong stuff. Right? In other words, we think Muir from Cheles, that's all for sure. The Red Zeners, they were told wrong with their Prussian blue cuttlefish, and we know for sure that it's Muir Cheles. I have sympathized with that approach, but it could be that Mirek Shunkless as well. They were making the same mistake back then. Pre-Chazam. Yeah, pre-Chazam. Yes, maybe they were, the Red Zener. You think the Red Zener Rebbe only had Hasidim in the 1800s? Red Zener Hasidim at Masada. I guess that those were the people who were killed in Masada were Red Zeners. That's what you have to say. Anyway. So I think we'll stop for now, and have a good night, and a good Shabbos, and we can talk about Chabad at Masada a different time. Okay, take care.